Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What is up, my fellow addicts? It is me, and look who's here, James Mattern.
I'm here, goddammit.
With Bob's Burger Movie, one of the biggest movies in the country, why not? Let's get Eugene Merman on to talk about the movie and to put James in his place.
Yeah, I still can't even look in the mirror.
Yeah, he really got you good.
Can you imagine getting scolded by him? Would you even take it serious?
God bless him. Of course not. We do this live every Wednesday, every Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern time. Use the code SDR, get 20% off and a 7-day free trial. And if you're a big Bob's Burger fan, you could have heard this 7 days ago, but really, all we care about is you spreading the love, listening to it everywhere. James, send us out. What episode are we about to listen to?
Eugene Merman.
On the SDR show.
This is the intro to the shit show. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. This is a hit show. Show me a tit show. Please, someone fuck the host. It's weed, I beat. It's hookers and blow. It's art, it's far. You need to know. The SDR show. Let's go.
It is the SDR show. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll show. I am Ralph Sutton. Back with me once again. In a fancy area with a fancy sports coat on. I don't know what's going on, James. You look so fancy.
Clean my goddamn act up, Ralph.
Why are you wearing a sports jacket? Let's start with that.
So I enjoy wearing these on stage, and they make me feel more polished when I host. And mm-hmm. I've noticed when I've done podcasts, when I do it, I'm more precise, kind of like my favorite skateboard person, Ronnie Mullen, who always just gets to the point of things. So I'm doing this as much as I can.
So it makes you feel a little more special that you're wearing. It gives you a little sense of power.
Yeah, I feel like Chrissy Hynde in Brass and Pocket. I'm special. Okay. Special.
Fair enough. Okay, so now this dude has been everywhere. I looked him up. I watched a lot of stuff. I've known his voice is omnipresent. Good word for those SAT people, by the way. In Flight of the Conchords, played Cecil Tunt on Archer. You probably knew him from a bunch of episodes of Star Talk, but most importantly, 12 seasons. And a new movie coming out, which I think while taping this comes out tomorrow, Gene from Bob's Burgers. It is Eugene Merman. How are you, sir?
Good. How are you?
Good. First of all, let me ask you this very important question in my research before we get into anything. Why would Gene be a lamb vindaloo burger? And more importantly, how did yours come out?
It came out, I would say, all right. I think because he is an adventurous spirit. It came out okay. The next day, I actually made like sort of a yogurt-ish sauce for it that was a little spicy, and I think it improved it.
Are you a chef? Do you have a food background? What inspired you?
I have no food background. I like cooking, and in the pandemic, I had in general cooked a bunch, and then in the pandemic, as I mostly made stuff at home, would do a lot of cooking.
So with this lamb vindaloo burger, did you just look up recipes online?
I went to an Indian market and bought a vindaloo sauce I have made lamb vindaloo before from a cookbook I have that's great, but it's like more involved, and I just wanted to see if this would work. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's funny. So you were born in Russia. You came here when you were four. I know you do speak fluent Russian, right? Is that right?
I do. I mean, like, I probably conjugate things a little imperfectly, but essentially, yeah.
So I, which is well documented on the show, have a specific love for Russian women. I've dated almost exclusively Russian women. So I've been told countless times I look like Philippe Kirkorov. You know who Philippe Kirkorov? There we go. Do you know who that is or no?
No, but I believe you.
I mean, some famous Russian singer. I hear it all the fucking time. But I can make great pelmeni and great borscht from scratch.
Nice.
Yeah, and I make them from hand. I learned in a grandmother's kitchen in Russia, actually in Lithuania. Oh, wow. But I will put my borscht up against any borscht on the planet. A girl I used to date said she hopes when she dies they feed her my borscht through the gates. That's how good my borscht is.
Wow. I would like to congratulate you.
I will say this. It is, here we go, James, ready? Vkusna. Vkusna?
Vkusna. Is that right?
Yeah.
Means delicious. I like know what, yeah. Yeah, totally.
That's Philippe Kirchhoff. That's him now.
That is like, the most ridiculous comp I've ever seen of any comparison ever, Ralph.
That's you in a odd disguise.
But here's the thing.
That's fair.
So this is like him now. We got to go back 20 years ago, right? Where I had long hair. He has long hair. He's 6'5". I'm 6'5".
Okay.
And so there is a Russian restaurant here in New York called Marivana, right? Mm-hmm. And I went in one day not knowing that he's in town. Like, it was a thing. Oh, my God. Philippe Kirkorov is in New York. I walked in and the place freaked the fuck out. And I didn't know what was going on. Like, they all thought I was him. I know that picture, though.
Maybe this one's better.
There we go. That's a little better. Imagine me with long hair. That's a little better. And if I had it slightly effeminate tones, that could be me.
I mean, it's interesting because he appears to be himself wearing a disguise. But I like it.
Ralph, that's you on a filter. Let's just be real blunt.
And actually,
this is you going, you guys like the new Instagram filter? Like, that's what that is. It turns me into a Russian singer.
And I know we didn't want to go into it so deep on Russian nonsense, but I actually was this girl that I was dating years ago. He retired at one point and was retiring all of his stage clothes. And she wrote him a letter in Russian to try and get him to give me his clothes. How fucking weird is that?
Yeah, that's unusual.
I mean, weirder than within 4 minutes into the show, you're like, Eugene, I don't know if you heard the rumors. I date Russian women. I mean, that's one of the most interesting opening of a podcast
ever. It's well established on the show. What could I tell you, James?
I understand.
Hey, what are you going to do? What are you going to do, James? I apologize. All right. So I wonder, before we get into Bob's Burgers, I watched the movie. It Started as a Joke, right? Which came out a couple years ago now, I believe. And things, amazingly, that I'm a native New Yorker. And I feel like, how the fuck did I miss out on this? Because it happened for 10 years. I don't know how I did not know about it. James, are you aware of the Eugene Merman Comedy Festival?
I never did the festival, but I went to Rafifi like a week or two into moving into New York, and it blew my mind away. I believe what it was Tuesdays or Wednesdays. It was, and I had like second row in the energy. Everyone's like, this is going to change how you think about comedy. And it was unbelievable. I was next to these nice Southern Baptist girls whose minds were getting triple destroyed. And one was called on stage with you and said that she loved Jesus. And that room of 90% atheist Jews were freaking the fuck out at her. And it was wonderful. It was a great night.
Sounds like a nice evening.
The best.
For the listeners that don't know, it's not only a very personal movie because it talks about your relationship with your wife who passed away from cancer a couple of years ago, but it also talks about how this comedy festival was literally started as a joke and then turned into something that lasted a decade in Brooklyn. And when you look at all the comedians that came through there, at least it's mind-blowing. Was it a bittersweet thing to let it go? Did you think about keeping it going, or you knew that 10 was it?
I mean, it was the sort of thing where we did it for a while. Julie, who produced it, had moved, and I was going to move. It was such a, like, the festival was such a labor of love with, like, whoever was around, and more people were sort of moving, ourselves included, that it was, like, to sort of keep doing it, I think it was unrealistic. That isn't to say that we wouldn't do, like, shows or potentially do other stuff. We still work together. I think just the idea of continuing the festival was probably too hard. Also with like our personal lives and stuff. And now I have like a child, and you know, the freedom you have when you're in your 30s in New York is not the same as when you have like a wife that's sick and a child.
Right. Of course. I can imagine that. And then, so I just want to ask a couple of questions about the movie because I did love it. I recommend people, you can watch it for free on Tubi, which is what I did. It's available on Tubi.
Nice.
The part that I found funny was there's a guy, he's sitting in a lawn chair in the street. I forget his name. And he says, and describe you in three words. And he said, not an asshole, right? That was the description. But then the very next story is from John Benjamin, who tells the story of him first meeting you, that from a perspective of mine, sorry to say this, you come off like an asshole. You walked into a restaurant, bit his pork chop and said, I'm leaving, and walked out, and you didn't know him. How true is that?
I mean, I think that that's not exact. I mean, I think like we, it's like a different version of the story. I think what actually, first of all, I think some version of that did occur, but it was like, really it was that I went in and they were had stopped serving food. And I like went across the street to get like French fries or something and came back. And the chef, who was a really sweet guy, was like, I made like a plate of these, like his like famous sandwiches. And I bit one of those and was like, this, and jokingly was like, this is terrible. But then we like all hung out that night. So,
oh, okay. Cause the way it's told like, on the show is a little differently. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and like, you know, it's now over, it's like 20 something years ago. So like, am I a little off with my memory or is he with it? Like, I don't know. Right. So I think like some version somewhere in between our stories is probably what happened.
Yeah, James, just so you know, the story that it was told, H. John Benjamin and him, who were now working together at least, I don't know how many years, because 12 of Bob's Burgers, but you were, I think, did home movies and some other stuff together too.
Like, right. Around that time, I did home movies.
Yeah. And he just walked into the restaurant and from H. John's perspective, took a bite of his pork chop and said, this restaurant, like jokingly, is not
terrible. And, terrible, like,
and walked out of the restaurant. And H. John was like, who the fuck was that?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we had met earlier that night and maybe before that as well, but yes. it was like whatever happened was both intended to be funny and ludicrous and maybe not like totally appropriate.
I'll tell you who that is. A gangster. That's a gangster move, Eugene. You should do it all the time.
I think, you know, look, it's it was Lauren was also there who created Bob's, right.
And he also did a couple of things you're in because he also did the daughter's devil thing.
Lucy, daughter of the devil. You know, Lauren tends to cast who he has in mind for stuff and then like kind of develop a show around that.
Exactly. We'll lead into it because I want to ask you questions about Bob's Burgers with that, especially that his name, the character you play is named after you, which seems to happen a lot in your career. You play a lot of Genes and Eugenes in shows.
Yes.
But just to wrap on the movie, because I really did enjoy it. The thing that's the sweetest, nicest thing in the world. And again, you know, my condolences for losing your wife. But how many people have a fucking picture of their first kiss with their wife? That's wild that you had that picture. That was in the when you got married, too. That was the marriage, whatever you want to call it. Invite was there as well. That's just fucking what a magical moment that is.
Yes. Yeah. A friend of hers actually was there and like left the bar and then like came back to get something and saw and took this photo. And so
that's
then like, we had this photo. It was amazing. Yeah.
It's really wild. And then there's a lot talked about, but not really in depth about this quote unquote infamous drunk show.
Yes.
What was this? I mean, it kind of touches on it, but was there anything specific that you remember that makes it so legendary chaotic?
Well, I think that it was a mix of I think the people on it who were like comics who were like, we don't really want to get drunk. So like when the game would be like, do this thing. And if you don't get it, like do two shots. And I think like some people were very cautious and were like, I'm going to do half a shot. And then other people were I'm gonna do whatever the thing is. And it was organized, it was this really fun show, the talent show, that was this amazing live show with different themes, different times. So once it was truth or dare, another time the drunk show. So I mean partially it was infamous because like I think Ira Glass was a little nervous, and so he drank a lot before the show began, which was very unnecessary. There's something very funny about a drunk Ira Glass explaining gerrymandering pretty well and like having this like still exuding this warmth. But it was organized partially by Elna Baker, who I think at the time had been drinking for I don't know only maybe a year less. She'd grown up Mormon. So I think she didn't really have a sense of what would be a reasonable amount of like drinking for people to do during a 2-hour span. But also like somebody from the audience like came on stage and got a tattoo of my face on their shoulder. There was like a lot of stuff that was like, and I was like, you should not do this. And I think he was like, I have a lot of tattoos. It's fine. there was just a lot of, I think, craziness. So I don't remember all the details exactly. Funny.
My first time a fan showed us that they got our logo tattooed on their body, my shitty mentality was we should change the name of the show just to piss that guy off. Like, that would be funny to me.
That is the most punk rock thing I've ever heard.
Yeah. Also, yes. Just to sound intelligent for a second, do you guys know where the term gerrymandering comes from?
A salamander and some guy named Jerry or something somewhere.
There you go. That's true. Yeah. A guy that made the map so obviously in favor of himself. Jerry was his name, and it looked like a salamander. So they called it a gerrymander, and that's how that name came about.
Yeah.
Look at, well, I guess Ira explained it well back in the drunk show, James.
I believe, yeah.
Next time you do it, I want you drunk. I really want you drunk, and I want you cooking Russian food for one of your 13 girlfriends.
Yeah, by the way, I went to cooking school, and I did that for 4 years, and we're opening a restaurant soon. I told you that. But we've done a lot of dumb drunk stuff on this show. One of them was to either you had to choose to eat a hot pepper or do a shot of alcohol for each round of questions and stuff. And people after the first round of peppers were so afraid of the pepper, they all went to the alcohol. That was crazy.
You got
to
go liquor every time.
Yeah, it was rough. And it wasn't even that hot of a pepper. I forgot what peppers it was. But anyway, all right, before we go any further, one of our other longtime sponsors right now, it is rockauto.com. So if you're an auto mechanic, a super cool do-it-yourself guy, or just someone who works on their own car, no more talking to counter guys who need to order parts or don't know exactly what you're looking for, or you perusing a store forever and then finding out they don't have the right size, the right make, the right this, the right that. Just go to rockauto.com. They have everything you could possibly need for your car, and you're going to have fun looking while you do it. rockauto.com. They are so confident in their pricing, they don't even have a discount code. That's how sure they are that they know their prices can't be beat. They are the one-stop shop for everything auto parts. It is rockauto.com. But when you do purchase something at rockauto.com, let them know where you heard about it. The SDR show. rockauto.com. Let's get back into it. We will move on to the other thing that I found fascinating. The I'm Sorry, You're Welcome album. Are you literally the longest comedy album ever created? Is that a fair assessment?
If it's like a single album, I'd say that's likely to be true. I find it unlikely that anyone's album is longer than my like 9 volumes, including 45 minutes of crying.
It is wild. A lot of it is blacked out on Spotify. I guess
it's because Spotify has removed everything that is stand up through this like weird rights debate that I'm sure one day will be figured out or everyone will switch to Apple Music. But yeah, so a lot of the album, if you want to hear in general stand up, I think, much of it has gone from Spotify and you have to probably either buy it or go to another streaming service.
But can you elaborate a little bit on the catalyst for creating such a monolithic thing?
The catalyst was a joke at one point where I think somebody had a double album that was like platinum and it turned out you only had to sell half the number at the time. By the time I did this was no longer the case. But it was sort of like, if you sold only like 100,000, you technically like, cause it was double or whatever it was, or 200,000. So I made some joke that I was going to make a 100 volume album and I would only need to sell like 10,000 to be platinum. Oh. Uh-huh. and then at some point I was like, you know, actually 9 volumes is funny enough. by the time that like, the idea that it would come out largely digitally, and we did make a vinyl version. So there is like a vinyl version that's 7 LPs with some of it being like two volumes on two sides. Mm-hmm. It was the idea of doing basically like a regular stand-up album, but then like I have ringtones and sound effects, an album of me teaching Russian, you know, all these ludicrous phrases. I remember hearing about something called digital drugs, which is basically audio that is meant to have the physiological effect of drugs. Like if you, there's like all these binaural videos and things online where people swear by it, even though it is obviously ridiculous. So like lots of people are like, this is marijuana, the audio. And so I have like that, but I also have like amoxicillin and like acetaminophen and stuff. So it's sort of like, yeah, if you think that it has the same physiological effect, like if you have an ear infection, try listening to my track. And I will say that the binaural beats, we did do literally the thing that like we put in the audio that does make it that people claim is the, like, whatever the tone is.
As a therapeutic, now. I mean, but I could say the argument, if I'm playing devil's advocate, there are people who truly feel an effect from ASMR stuff. I don't. You know, when you
sure, I'm not saying audio and music can't have an effect on your mood and feeling and like things like that. I just mean like the actual effect that like cocaine, marijuana, or heroin, or amoxicillin have on your body is not the effect that audio is having. I'm not saying you can't get sad, like, or you can't be aroused. I'm just saying like, you're not going to clear an infection. So like, you know, the claim that it's like, you know, heroin is probably a bit much.
The hard album that you came out with, was it unfolded seven times or was it seven?
No, it was like a box. I wonder if I don't think I should have a copy. I probably do stuff. Oh, here it is.
Yo, this is basically the comedy.
This is like a box set. Of the album, and it also came out as a chair. It was a physical chair that you would sit in, and like you could put on head, like plug into the chair and listen to the audio. And it was, the album was a chair, and the album was also a robe.
A robe.
So you could buy the album in different formats, and the formats were digital, vinyl, robe, chair, and I believe there was one copy that was a dog, essentially. It was a dog collar that came with a dog that someone adopted.
So just so I understand, the robe had like a USB thumb drive in it or something?
Yeah, it was sewn in. So the robe was it was a robe you put on and you plugged in headphones that came like that went through the sleeve, and then the robe was the album.
That is fucking batshit crazy. Did you sell a lot of robes?
I think we sold the like I don't know, like we made like 30, and I think we saw something like that and sold around that many.
This is like comedy's Lou Reed's Metal Machine Music. It's the greatest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, except for I wasn't trying to get out of a recording contract.
You probably got an extra five records on your deal because of it. It's the greatest thing I've ever heard.
The album recouped, you know. So.
He wasn't trying to get out of a recording contract. He was trying to fudge the system and go platinum with 10,000. That's what was trying to
happen. By the time I did it, I knew that like the way that albums were calculated, it had all changed. But it was really fun, and it is definitely like a ludicrous album. And I think at the time people were talking about, you know, the future of formats of music and all this stuff, and I was like, I would like to, the future is chairs and robes and weird.
I mean, it's fucking brilliant. But that's just, it's because it's so unique. How could somebody not fucking love that? God damn it. It's weird.
Do I have the sticker?
Was your face on the robe or with the tie? It said it on the robe, like, or something? Was your face on the robe or like the album cover?
No, it was, I think it was this like little logo was on the back. And then I also really wanted to put, I mean, this has like a little description amongst the things, is featuring over 45 minutes of crying, which I just like wanted to have an album that was like a sticker, as if people were like, holy shit, the crying I've been looking for. And
honestly, though, his early crying or stuff was much better than the new crying.
Yeah, it's true. The crying of 2003 is
much more genuine. It's much more genuine than the crying you get now.
But yeah, it was, and then I think I wrote Banned in Saudi Arabia, because there was also like 195 orgasm sounds is one of the volumes that all have ludicrous names.
Were there concepts that you wanted to add and you're like, this is too ridiculous, I'm leaving it off the record?
You know, it wasn't that there were concepts that were like, that I wanted to add that I just couldn't think of the actual, like, you could come up with it. Like, if you do like ringtones, you can make a bunch of ridiculous ringtones. But there were other ideas that were like a funny concept, but like what the actual content would be was too like either confusing or unrecordable, basically. Yeah.
Just in a somewhat relatable story, and I was going to do a self-plug for a minute. I put out this book last year called The 100% Guaranteed Guide to Weight Loss and Fitness, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just two pages. The first page says eat less, and the second page says work out more, and the rest of the book is blank. And I was going to put out an audio version that was 3 hours long that just had me saying those four words, 3 hours of silence, and then me plugging, you know, who published it, where, when it was created.
Yeah.
I just never got around to doing that, but I just think it would have been
too late.
It is never too late. So now, going back a bit, you came to this country when you were four. The crazy story, and I try to do my research, don't know if it's always accurate or not, but you told a story somewhere that your mom's phone was tapped at one point and your home was searched in Russia. But do you have memories of that, or that was something that was told to you?
No, I think I was like, I think my mom was pregnant with me. I don't have memories of the searches. But yeah, my dad was like interviewed, interrogated by the KGB, I think, you know, several times for several hours. And I think they didn't like it, somehow it ended up being that like he wasn't arrested, you know, but friends of his were definitely like arrested and jailed. And a lot of it was, you know, for having essentially this thing called Samizdat, which is like basically self-published stuff that would get passed around. And there was some that had, I think it was like literally a magazine that might have been a collection of a mix of poetry. And then also like a log of like who had been arrested, like from the KGB, like this person was arrested in Riga and this person in Moscow and this stuff. And I think they really wanted to figure out where the leak was, but it wasn't, it was just like the information was just like what here would be considered a police log, and there was considered obviously like a leak in their secret service.
That's pretty wild.
Yeah. So, but like people would, you know, retype and pass around like lots of literature and magazines and various things. So it was like this sort of like underground network.
It's like me passing around Jerky Boys tapes in high school kind of thing.
Exactly. And which is why probably the police came to you and were like, these crank calls go too far.
Go too far.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
By the way, our producer just told us completely out of left field, but I don't know if you knew him or not. Ray Liotta just passed away right now. Did you know him, any chance?
I didn't know him.
Ray Liotta just died.
Literally just passed away.
As we're doing this.
Yeah, that's pretty wild. Sorry. Well, I didn't know him, but good actor. That's what I just said.
Goddamn good, fellas.
Yeah, I mean, Jesus Christ. All right, so then.
Now, like Luke Wilson and Royal Tannenbaums. I'm going to take a shoe off. It's unbelievable.
That's pretty wild. Sad. So just to get back, sorry, I just thought maybe you knew him, we'd have a story, but we don't. Okay. And then when you came into this country, I've never heard this. You went to some school where you could design your own major and you designed comedy as your major. How is that even possible? And what kind of curriculum did you put together?
So, yeah, I went to Hampshire College where everybody who goes there designs their own major. I did, you know, for sociology, I did like there's like, you know, various requirements. So for like, I think sociology or so not sociology for social science, I did a paper on like Lenny Bruce and his effect on culture. For science, I did a project on the physiology of laughter. But then also I just took classes in like, you know, acting and writing and film, and then like the history of vaudeville, like, you know, a variety of things that then were pieced together. Mm-hmm. I had a radio show and, you know, I started my final project was a 1-hour stand-up act that I, you know, wrote and produced and performed and promoted. And I did like a weekly comedy show in the basement of my dorm to practice for it. So what at the time seemed like a sort of ludicrous, like major was actually just incredibly practical. It was all the stuff I and every comic we know did when they got to New York City, or Boston for me, and then New York. But like, I then like started my own show and promoted it and like used to hand out flyers, but not for like a club, but for like my own weekly thing. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's sort of where I think that kind of is where a lot of my ethos of how to do comedy in terms of like, instead of trying to get through an existing system, try to find fans that might enjoy the thing that me and other people are doing and try to build an audience that way.
Right. One of the things you've said, which I think is, I kind of followed that same path, which is that you make something and then find people will find it, or just make your own path. You've written your own stuff. You didn't look to go onto the big stages in New York or whatever. You just kind of found a way to do your own thing. Even if it's opening for bands or whatever it was more of a unique trajectory than the common comedy pathway. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah. And I think it's also like what was sort of within my, like more within my control, like meaning as opposed to like, I can't remember. I think there was some club where before I moved to New York, I had like passed and I think called in avails, but like never heard back. It was just like, the process was like, I don't get what this is, but I get the idea of walking through the East Village and looking for a space that has a small theater and seeing if I could do a show, like, and then like promoting that show with a mix of flyers and word of mouth and whatever, like it just seemed like more doable, and you know, and was, you know, at the time.
Like, I just, not to make it about me, but I couldn't get a job in major radio when I started in radio. So I created a show and then got that show sold to radio station. Before I knew it, I was on 100 stations around the country, but I never got hired by an actual stations. I just got my show on these stations. So it was a very different way. I didn't go to try on stations, and get...
But in the end, you're doing the same thing. Yeah, right, so I think that's like the, you know, yeah, I find that to be both. It also was more fun in a sense, like meaning, you know, you get to do the thing you like in spaces you like. I mean, not that all of it, like, you know, opening for bands is not easy. And I would almost say, suggest, I guess it, like, to not do it, but I guess it just depends. You know, as you do it more and more, you figure out what works and then like do that. Like, I now know that like you do sort of shorter sets, or like you can't, you know, I think that sometimes people ask you to MC music shows and you're like, and you just have to say like, you can't talk while people are testing instruments. Like, there's just random stuff that as you practice doing it, you're like, oh sure, I'll happy to go on, but it can't be like when someone's testing a drum.
Right.
But in like a organizer's mind, they're like, oh, it'll be fun, like a comical chat with people. But really, it's like you can't do stand up while someone's testing instruments.
James, you look like you're chomping at the bit.
My last gig ever in Vegas before I moved to New York, I was at this place called a dive bar, and they sent me on before a band, and the band didn't know me, and they were a female band. And as I'm doing my act, they kept taking clothes of me off, and I kept going on till I was stripped naked. That's how tough it was. There's a nightmare.
Did it go over well or didn't go over?
Yeah, they paid me. It went great. Apparently they paid me in a bucket of Bud Light, which I don't even drink. That's what I got paid for, getting stripped down by these country punks from Nashville.
That's really, you know, Big J, who's my normal co-host, he did a very, always talk about touring with Korn. He opened for Korn and he said it was always in the beginning tricky until he learned the right way to talk to that audience.
Right.
Do you have a favorite band that you toured with?
I mean, I've done a lot of, I mean, a lot of shows that, like, you know, I toured opening for Andrew Bird, and I did a, like a co-headlining tour with Robin Hitchcock. I do a lot of shows with Wesley Stace, who used to go by John Wesley Harding.
You did Modest Mouse at one point.
I did a Modest Mouse tour of Florida with them
before
with
they
a band
blew up,
opening,
though.
Then me, and then you know. So yeah, I've done a lot of tours with bands. I haven't, you know, as much in a while, but it's, you know, I think once you kind of figure out how to do it and like the amount of like time to spend on stage, it's much easier.
It's funny, by the way, because I talk about this with Jay a lot, like the idea of hosting something versus being a comic on stage for shows or whatever, it's very different energy. Jay hates the host position. Like, even one time on Shiprock, the thing that him and I did for a few years, he couldn't manage like a game, like a beer pong or whatever. He would lose the room because he couldn't be an asshole. You have to be like, dude, you know, he has to be, and I'm great at being an asshole. So he texted me once to please come save him. And I walked in and the room was in a state of disarray. He's on stage with a microphone. Everyone's yelling at each other. He doesn't know what the fuck to do. He just came to please help. Like, you don't know, as a comic, he's used to just telling stories and not yelling at people. It's a very different
energy.
Right.
I mean, that's the thing. It's like sometimes a very different, and it's also like, I mean, I also realized quickly, like, that you have to like make sure the audience knows that you're going to do stand up. So like, you know, I think before people would have really had any way to know me, I would be like, make sure to like list on the bill that I'm a comedian, like sure that people know that it's like music, stand up, and then more music, and not like a person who sings wrong.
Yeah. Or, I mean, this fucking Brody won't shut up. What the fuck is going on if they don't know, you know, I imagine that's happened.
That's happened before. A dude I knew in Vegas named Pyro Pete, his real money was doing pyrotechnics, but he was like a good comic in Vegas years ago. And he was like our mentor. He did pyro for the Stones. The opening act didn't make it. They're like, Pete, just go out there, do some announcements and do your act. He does the announcements, does the act for 5 minutes killing. And then around 6 or 7 minutes, they realize that some asshole with tattoos on his head is just doing stand-up. They start chanting Stones for 5 minutes. He runs off. He's like, I'm never doing that again.
Yeah. I did. I hosted, which was actually really fun, this tour for Cake.
I love that Limited
Sunshine tour. It was Cake, Gogo Bordello, and Tegan and Sarah.
What a lineup.
And it's funny because I would open the show and it would be great. And then I would do something after the first band and that was fun. And then like before Cake, like I think the first one or two shows, maybe I was like, they wanted me to do something and I was going to, but then like right away people start chanting Cake and it's sort of like, there's no point in being like, here's a fun story about growing up. Like nobody did that. So then I'd be like, you know what? Here's Cake.
What if you just cried? What if you just went back
just
to one of those
album.
Discs?
Just play the album.
If it's on screens, then yeah. I mean, and you could show video and that and like, but also at the very beginning, before Cake was about to go on, like, you know, for the first half of the night, it was great. Like they were attentive and, you know, people understand that the headliner isn't going on, but then when they know the headliner is going on and it's like, and it's the time, you know, that they go on, then they're like, whatever you're doing, you gotta not.
1 year I was about to introduce the headlining band and it's like, everyone's drunk. They're ready to go on. It's on a ship and it's middle of the day. The owner comes up and goes, look, the band is not going to go on for 45 minutes. They're going to be 45 minutes late. You have to go up and just kill time. And I went up and I was playing If You're Happy and You Know It, Clap Your Hands. I was interviewing people. I was doing dumb sing-alongs. And at the end, they all hated me, like that jerk talked for 40 minutes, but nobody blamed the venue. Nobody blamed the band. They just thought I lost my mind for a half hour.
Right. Just became a warm-up comic.
Which is also funny because it's like how, like the second you do a show, you're like, well, that's not possible. Like nobody, there's no accidental 45-minute performance on an evening. Right.
And then they like think like it's they like hilarious. The whole part of it, like, did they think if I did that on my own volition, they wouldn't stop me? Like, of course this was done on purpose. You know, like, why else would I do that? Like, oh, let's see what Ralph can say for 45 minutes. It makes no sense. It's so stupid. All right. Before we go any further, I would like to tell you all about one of our longtime sponsors. You know them by now, simply as the home of the $60 kilo. We are talking about Yo Kratom, especially now. Inflation's happening. Prices are going up everywhere. The one place you can rely on pricing not going up, not changing, it's YoKratom.com, home of the $60 kilo. High-quality curated Kratom direct to you with the YoKratom guarantee of a simple mathematical formula of $60 a kilo. They have tons of their own unique strains. I've said it many times. Shannon loves the Trainwreck one. 11 different Kratom strains all mixed together. Where else are you going to go for that great quality Kratom other than YoKratom.com? Home of that $60 kilo. Plus, it just sounds so cool to say, all right, give me 2 kilos, as J.O. Christian likes to say. Again, it is YoKratom.com. Support the sponsors that support this show. Home of the $60 kilo. No one should go without Kratom in 2022. YoKratom.com. Let's get back into it. Anyway, so let's move into the Bob's Burger world right now. So my first question would be, was the character indeed named after you? Like, that was Lauren's idea?
I think, yes, Gene is named after me. And a lot of the stuff I've done, it's working with friends who then end up often naming the character,
after me.
And then the one that like isn't, like Cecil Tunt, is drawn to look like me.
Right. One of them was named after, had your, like, it's funny, on Apple and Onion, you're named Burger, which is obviously a nod to Bob's Burgers. Yes. But one of them was on some show, it was your Russian name. It was your name.
Yes, because I played like a Russian, like sort of half mobster, half comedian on Delocated.
Yeah, so it all comes back to, but what I like about Bob's Burgers, I don't know if this is still true. You said in an interview that you kind of all, I don't know if you could do it during the pandemic, but you record together and a lot of the lines that everyone loves, happened organically were not written. Is it still done that way to this day?
I mean, the writers write a lot. Like I think like we definitely improvise somewhat. I think when the pandemic first began, they sent us like microphones to our house. I was recording like in a closet with a lot of pillows, as we all were. And then eventually in like a little sound booth I had at home. And so for the first year we were doing it individually. And then now the way it used to work is that we would be on in different cities, but on headphones together, where like half would be in LA, half in New York, and eventually in the Boston area and those places, but at the same time. And so now through, you know, some app, we are now together again. So this whole last season we recorded together, like where we could hear each other. And then we're doing the lines as written. And then the thing that's great about, you know, voiceover is you do it as written and then you can try a bunch of different things. You can try different jokes and they, you know, unlike, it's not like a scene where you're filming and then you're resetting all this stuff and there's so many people, you're just going like, hey, can I try this joke? And then you do it. And then if they want, they use it. And if they don't, they don't. So it takes, in a sense, a lot of pressure off, but it also allows you to like do ridiculous things that, you know, I think the second episode, there's this whole Gene and Bob have this debate that's improvised where Bob is stuck in a wall and Gene insists that The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe was written by Salman Rushdie. And, you know, the episodes air like a year later. So I remember we did that. And then like a year later, I was like, oh my God, that made it in.
One of your favorite scenes was when Chris and Charles' character cut your hair.
Yes. And that was I think written as a few lines. And then it became this really funny, like improv with everybody jumping in. So there's still, I mean, now, especially that we can do it together again, we have that. I mean, when we're alone, we can improvise essentially like jokes, different versions of the lines we have. But when you're together, you can sort of like go off and then come back. But the writers also are so good at now writing to all our, like to both the characters' voices and our comedic voices. And in general, Lauren cast the show for each of our sort of voices and kind of structured each character kind of around each of the actors.
Was the movie done the same way, or movies are too big budget? You can't fuck around as much.
You probably could fuck around in a movie, but with the pandemic, the way it ended up having to happen was normally we record the audio and then it's animated and then it's out a year later. So with the movie, there was a lot of writing and rewriting and animation and then our voices. Like we recorded a bunch from home, but then like sort of around the time, I think like vaccines were coming out, you know, sort of after we were vaccinated, we were going into a studio to record. So the movie, like, I wouldn't remember if it had improv or not exactly. Like, like it was also, the movie took like 5 years.
That's what I asked. So, like, how long did you have to sit on the movie? Like, how long did you know?
Oh, I don't think they sat on it. I think it was like, I think it was like adjusting where like, we were going to do it this way. And then all of a sudden there's a pandemic. So it's like, you know, they moved, I think, a lot of like equipment to animators' houses to, you know.
But I just mean like you knew for, you said it's been 5 years in the making. Most of us only found out about it this year. So
you found out about this year, but it had been announced like years ago and it was originally going to come out in maybe 2020. I think it was originally going to come out in 2020. Then it got pushed. And then there was like a pandemic and it got pushed again. So I think like there was... Yeah. So I think at some point it became clear, like we can't actually record it. Like it's unclear what will happen in the world. And with, you know, with TV, I think this, you know, speakers are smaller and all this stuff. With a movie theater, like I think there's some stuff that was from our houses, but a lot of it was probably from the studio, from like a recording studio where like you're going to hear it on these giant speakers and it needs to be clear and sound good.
And it's, I think you had 12, you have 12 seasons in the can already, right? It's been 12
yes,
seasons.
I believe
that's
so.
Fucking crazy. Yeah. Do you play keyboards at all or only Gene, the character?
I wish. I might try to learn, but Gene is much better at music than I am. Like even the singing, like the way they do it, because I can like kind of mimic, but I am some version of tone deaf and certainly rhythm deaf. So like they'll sing a short line and I will repeat it a bunch of times. And then they're like, okay, you got it. And then they'll do the next line and then they edit it all together. So Gene is like an incredibly competent version of my actual singing.
That's good. Would you say Gene is on the spectrum or no?
I think he's like, I don't know. Like he's, wouldn't exactly put it that way, but he is, I think originally they had made him a little, they, I think, had somebody a little dopier in mind. And I think I had somebody a little more savanty in mind. That's probably somewhere in between.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
You also, know, like, he's a kid who can make a joke about Salman Rushdie, but he also does not know what he's talking about.
Right. Yeah, it's a, there's so many great, like, little one liners where there's no way he would know that as a 9 year old, or how old he's supposed to be. You know,
yeah, 11. Yeah, yeah. He has, like, look, he watched the same number of 80s TV shows I did, and that's probably unusual in a modern child.
And it's also unique because I think all three of you kids, it's your voices. You know, yeah. All three of you, there's no, even, you know, Bob also, there's no putting on a voice. This is your voice. So I imagine, especially now, all the time, people hear you and they're like, oh, that's Gene.
Yes, I think that, that happens.
Because it is weird now, also, not to get into a big topic on it, but there is a big movement in the politically correct world that we live in where only certain people should play certain characters. And on Bob's Burgers, there's guys playing girls. There's, you know, things that would be looked at as maybe non-correct these days.
I mean, I think that it's a little different in that a lot of it is more like, you know, if somebody's an underrepresented character, to have one of the only mass media representations to be this thing. But it's not like there aren't, you know, like different like men and women on TV. So I think I think now if it was done, I don't know if they would like recast any of it or not. But I think they're also like kind of conscious of that.
The two girl characters on the show, I think, are both men, right?
And then Laura and Sarah Silverman play like little boy kids, so right. Yeah, you know, yeah, there's like a lot of I think for Lauren it's like the voice and what he like in like sort of like imagines for it.
Yeah. And then my last Bob's Burger question, just I guess I have to ask it, when you heard about Jay Johnson storming the Capitol, did you go, that seems about right, or were you shocked by it?
I was very surprised, but I also don't know him well. I think my surprise is equivalent. Like, I think I started seeing people being like, it really, like at first when I saw a photo, I was like, sure, that looks like him, but lots of people do. And then I started seeing people being like, no, that's him. He really has gotten into that. It seemed insane. I thought it was insane.
Pretty wild. And then I'm sure you can't talk about this at all, but I saw you're in the new fucking Fletch reboot. Do you have a big part in it or a small part in it, or
a small part? I'm a security guard.
Who's playing Fletch, or is that even public knowledge? I don't know.
It is. You could look at IMDb and John Hamm is.
Oh, John Hamm. Oh, wow, that's exciting.
I think it'll be great, and it's directed by Greg Mottola, who did Superbad. I think it'll be very funny.
Oh, that's awesome. And then you shot already.
I did it last summer.
That is fucking exciting. I heard they're rebooting. Is it Naked Gun? And what's his name? The Irish guy's playing Leslie Nielsen. Liam Neeson is playing Leslie Nielsen.
Oh, that's pretty exciting. I did not hear that.
And their names are so fucking similar. It's pretty wild. Like, it's almost the same name.
That is the weirdest casting I've ever heard.
I don't know. I could see Liam Neeson being straight.
I mean, I think it's like they're taking a serious actor who hasn't done a lot of comedy. I think that was the premise of Naked Gun.
Yeah.
So I think that that's exciting.
And then I have to say, honestly, one of my favorite shows of all time is Flight of the Conchords. I've seen them live three times, I think. Like, they played Queens, Forest Hill Stadium.
Yeah, I was on that show.
You were on that show, as I say. So you're there. That is maybe my favorite show of all time. I could watch that show from start to finish over and over again. Just love everything about that. I wish there would be some sort of reboot there, although I doubt that'll ever happen.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't think you would be happy for it.
Yeah. All right. So the new Bob's Burgers. We got to do the first, Shannon. We'll do that now. Then we'll wrap.
The first time ever I saw concert, did drugs, had sex.
So the name of the show is the SDR Show, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll Show. We ask every guest this since the dawn of time, their first experience with all three. We start with rock and roll, and we ask you the first concert you ever went to. Ideally, something we're going to know and not.
I think you'll know this band. I think you'll know both bands. My first concert was, I think I was in eighth grade, and my brother took me and I saw Guns N' Roses open for Aerosmith.
Oh my God, I wanted to go to that show so bad.
That's a fun, you know, that show, that tour is a very unique tour because Guns got on the cover of Rolling Stone and Aerosmith didn't. And it was a big hoopla when that happened.
I think like when this tour started, you know, they were Guns N' Roses were a rising band. And then by the time even I saw them, because it was in Great Woods in Massachusetts, they were maybe like stars already. And were like the, I forget like what hits had come out, but yeah, it was amazing. It was amazing.
Yeah, that's wild. Did that make you a, I mean, are you, you seem to be more of an alternative rocky guy, but are you a mainstream rock guy, like stuff like that? I know I read
I love like, I do love like Aerosmith and Guns N' Roses and also like a lot of classic rock. Like I listen to, you know, tons of classic rock and yeah, I like kind of all sorts of stuff, but it's true that probably more modern stuff, probably more alternative, older stuff, like a lot of country or 50s. And
are you still going to see rock shows? Does that excite you to go see a concert?
I'm
going to
see The Who tomorrow.
Oh, well, there you go.
No, not tomorrow. Saturday. Saturday, I'll see The Who. Yeah.
Fair enough. Okay, yes. And now the first drug you ever did after weed, unless weed wasn't your first drug.
That'd be great. Ketamine. No, I was somebody nine.
Somebody had a crazy first drug that wasn't weed. I don't remember who it was, but there was like a, it was like a shocking, like crystal meth or something was their first drug, something nuts like that. But anyway, go back.
It was shrooms in college where I think it was like a sort of magical, like it felt like I remember like the grass looking amazing and all this stuff. But then I basically, I think after that, I was like 18, I had essentially what now I bet is like an allergic reaction to pot. And it like, where I like felt like I was hyperventilating. So it like terrified me off of drugs. So like, I will say like that shrooms experience was amazing, but then I became like, I became too anxious from like hyperventilating from pot.
And so now you're totally off any sort of drug.
Well, I mean, at this point? Drink, but I don't do drug. I mean, I would consider like all the, what's it called? Like the, you know, now, there's whatever, all the like edible stuff, but again, I think my experience, it was just like a little, I'm like a little anxious. Like, would I eat a pot gummy? Probably, but I'm not like, it's more like I'd probably do it, but not like I can't wait.
Right. You know? Fair enough. And the first time you had sex?
Also in college. Pretty good story.
Like someone you were dating for a while or a one-off?
Someone I dated.
Okay, fair enough. James, you look like you're going to ask something. I'm sorry.
No, I'm just enjoying all this. I am very shocked, Eugene, that Guns N' Roses and Aerosmith was your first concert. That's the concert I wanted to go to, and that's amazing.
I saw Guns N' Roses this summer at Fenway Park in Boston. I've gone, my brother has seen them a bunch.
I love them. I mean, I did an 80s rock radio show. That was my syndicated radio show. It was all 80s rock for 12 years. Yeah. I lived and breathed 80s rock for most of my adult life.
I wonder if it was for my 40th birthday, but I went to see Aerosmith again at Great Woods, the same place that I saw them for the first time, and it was super fun.
And Steven Tyler just went into rehab yesterday.
Gone to see him, but hopefully he'll feel fine, and then I'll go see them again. They were like, when I saw them, and again, it's probably now like 6-7 years ago, maybe more, but it was, they were like, he, like every song running between every single like band member, like the energy was like, how do you have this energy?
Like, he burns more calories at a show. Well, than
now
the
we
Olympic
know,
athlete.
We know why he was on drugs. That's how he was doing it.
I don't know. 7 years ago, he probably wasn't. He is probably, yeah, probably like, right, yeah. He probably had a 5-hour energy drink and then he was off.
I love the idea of Steven Tyler after years of being called the Toxic Twins with Joe Perry, just taking a 5-hour energy drink so he can bang out Ragdoll is the greatest image I could ever imagine.
The times he's been on drugs recently, I think it's like whenever he's had like a surgery.
Right. That's
like,
true.
I don't think it's like he is using it to perform. I think he's like using it to get through ankle pain.
One of my early bits, and my buddy back home always wants me to bring it back, and it's the worst, was I was in love with Aerosmith and Liv Tyler, and my dream was to marry Liv Tyler. And I was like, how wacky would Thanksgiving be? There'd be handkerchiefs tied on the leg, and he'd be like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like, I can't do the voice now. Have some mashed potatoes. It's the worst thing ever. I can't believe I just admitted it here, but Why not? If we're admitting Aerosmith love, let's put it all on the table. I still love the Rocks album. Take that,
everybody. I thought your story was going to be you wanted to have a threesome with Liv and Steven. That would be weirder.
With me watching. That'd be the only way it'd be weirder. Yeah. Let's get them all in there. Yeah.
All right, so Bob's Burgers, the movie is out now as we are recording this. I'm assuming it's coming back for a 13th season at some point.
I think it was renewed. We'll start next September.
I wouldn't be surprised. Following you at Eugene Merman or EugeneMerman.com has everything you would need to do about you. If you're ever in New York and you want to experience my borscht, let me know. Is there anything else you want to plug before we go around the room?
No, I think that the movie and that all sounds fine.
Okay. And I would say again, I really did enjoy the movie. It started as a joke. It's available watch it for free on Tubi. And why not just go do that? It's free. James, go.
I'm going to go pay for it. I want you to get a little bit of some cash out of me, Eugene. All right. And I'm going to get the album. That's great. I want the crying. Yo, man, June 3rd, the Check Spot special is out on YouTube. It's out. It is me doing. You might like this, Eugene. I did a whole special and album while people paid their checks. I just recorded the Check Spot. It is coming out finally as a special June 3rd and June 2nd. We're doing a screening at New York Comedy Club, 4th Street, 10:15 show, screening at midnight. Me, the great Night Cream, Yamanika Saunders, Phil Hanley, and Andy Fiore. It's going to be the greatest thing I've ever done. Check Spot, June 3rd. Please go watch it.
Where did you record the Check Spot?
I did it at New York Comedy Club, the other location, and my old record label wouldn't put it out. And then I recorded a whole weekend of it when everything opened up a year ago at New York Comedy Club. And we filmed it, and we finally putting out the film. It's in black and white. It's like a Cassavetes directed my goddamn special. And it's weird and great, and there's interviews, and I love it. So the Check Spot.
Did you do your record release at midnight that I couldn't go to because I'm too old to go to already? Has that happened already?
Well, I did the record release at 10:15, and you didn't go to that show because you're in bed by 8:35, so you can wake up and take out Russian models and cook fucking borscht.
Sleep early. I went to bed at 9 o'clock last night because I'm old, James. And then,
I mean, when do you want me to do releases? I'm still out there. You want me to do these at noon?
Do it like at 7. At 7 o'clock.
You can do it at 8. 8 is like when a lot of people could go.
Yeah. But it becomes a party after.
Party afterwards. I don't care.
I've heard of parties that start at 10.
Yeah, I don't want to.
But it's at a comedy club, Eugene. I really needed you as an ally, as a comic. Look, is it because he makes borscht?
10 o'clock party. Well, you can still stay out till 4. You can still stay.
But the club wants to have 2 shows, so the club has an 8, and then I get a little warm up.
All right.
Am I making sense here, businessman? All right, gentlemen.
No. It makes sense.
Shannon,
now you're bringing the Italian out. Fanabla, both of you guys.
Shannon, your plug, please.
That sounds fine. That's a great plan.
Let's agree to disagree. Go, Shannon.
You can follow me on Instagram at ShannonLee6982 and listen to my podcast, The Thing Is Ding. We talk about bad dates, fighting, and ghosts. We have all sorts of interesting guests come on, comedians, musicians, reality TV stars, and porn stars, and they tell their personal experiences about a bad date experience, a time they got into a street fight, and an experience with the paranormal.
I like your glasses, Shannon.
Thank you.
Now, Eugene, do not give any indication. We try to guess this every week. Her show's about bad dates, fighting, and ghosts. Does the guest believe in ghosts? Don't give any indication until all three of us chime in. James, does Eugene believe in ghosts? Yes or no?
First of all, I'm going to give you, if this was on DraftKings, this would be high odds. No would be like -350. And I'm going to lay the points. I'm saying it's an absolute capital letter no.
Okay. Shannon?
You go first.
I think us Jews very rarely believe in ghosts. And I'm sticking with my gut Jew boy instincts and saying no.
I'm really stumped here. I'm just going to go against the two of you and I'll say yes.
Okay. Eugene, do you believe in ghosts?
No.
Okay. But this was the easiest one we've ever had.
It doesn't mean that I don't believe in unexplainable things. I just don't have the answer for things people don't know. And the idea that I'm like, it's definitely ghosts and this is how ghosts work. No.
Okay, fair enough.
Believe in the possibility.
I believe that anything that I don't have an answer for, something being possible, but I don't know that I imagine it to be the actual souls of the once living, stuck at not the age they died, but at like some random age. I don't know. It feels not how things would be structured.
Shannon's trying to back into a potential yes, but it didn't happen. So my track record's pretty good with this, I have to say. I think I've only been wrong a couple of times.
I feel like you keep saying that, though, on every episode. You keep getting it wrong, and you're like, oh, damn it, I haven't gotten it wrong.
Shut your mouth, Shannon. I just got it right. All right. Follow me everywhere at I Am Ralph Sutton, and my other podcast on health and wellness comes out every Monday called Good Sugar. We're opening our first location in New York City, Good Sugar, on the corner of 3rd Avenue and 69th Street, which will be open end of June or early July at the latest. And Eugene, honestly, thank you so much for coming on. I'm such a fucking huge fan of everything you've been on. It's crazy to have you on, so I'm very happy. We add a song every week to the show, thestrshow.com/playlist. I feel like you got to pick either a Guns N' Roses or Aerosmith song for this.
Oh, God. Yeah, I guess so. Let's do Last Child.
Oh, that's a good song.
Just a punk in the street, baby.
Yeah, a good one.
Just a punk in the street.
Thank you so much, Jude. We'll see everyone next time on the SDR show. Peace.
Listening to the SDR show.